in Matthew, it tells us in verse 23 that Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. And news about him spread all over Syria, and people brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, those suffering severe pain, the demon-possessed, and those having seizures, and the paralyzed, and he healed them. Large crowds from Galilee, from the Decapolis, from Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan followed him. There was Jesus. There was no time to sleep, no time to eat, no time for anything. So here, at the beginning of Matthew 5, we see he slipped away. And it tells us he went up on a mountainside. No one really knows today quite where this was. But I remember when I went on a pilgrimage to Israel many years ago, we were taken up a hillside in Galilee above Lake Tiberias, or the Sea of Galilee as it's often called, and it was suggested that maybe this was the place that that Jesus preached his great sermon to his followers. Whether it was or not, well, that really isn't very important. But it was an ideal place, peaceful, remote and tranquil, with the sparkling blue waters of the lake stretching out in the distance below him. Here, or in a similar place, Jesus sat down, it tells us, no doubt gladly. He'd done enough standing up, enough walking about. And his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. It was quite common for a rabbi to sit down to teach. That was the way they did it. And so Jesus sat. And we read in Matthew 5 and verse 3 his opening words. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." This passage is usually known as the Beatitudes. The name Beatitudes comes from a Latin word which is simply beatus, blessed. And the sense is, oh, the blessedness of. Oh, the blessedness of. We get the same in Psalm 1 and verse 1. "Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked." Billy Graham, in his preaching, always used to refer to this passage as the beautiful attitudes. And I think that's rather nice. The beautiful attitudes. The emphasis is on the messianic bliss of the poor and oppressed. The Beatitudes round us off as they were begun, with the promise of the kingdom. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom." And again, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Righteousness must mean right conduct. And it's only when this is involved that the persecuted can be regarded as blessed. All the Beatitudes upset human calculations. Probably the final one, this one on persecution, more than most. We could say that these are unexpected blessings. We normally perceive ourselves as blessed when life circumstances are going well. But this teaching shows us that God's views, how he looks at us, are quite different to how we feel ourselves, how we're blessed by God is quite different to what we would expect. If you and I had written the Beatitudes, I wonder what we would have listed. Blessed are. What would we think would bless us? What make us happy? Blessed are the rich. Those who've won the lottery, perhaps. Would that be one of our choices? Blessed are the fat cats in their sports cars.
Your microphone.
The microphone's fallen off.
Oh dear, it's not, doesn't fix very well, this microphone. Try again to pin it on. Blessed are the fat cats in their sports cars and their multi-million pound yachts and private aeroplanes. They might seem blessed to us, but I wonder, are they really happy? Or perhaps we think that it's those who seem to have not a care in the world. Seemingly, everything always seems to go right for them. J.B. Phillips once suggested the following as Beatitudes for the 20th century. Blessed are the pushers, for they get on in the world. Blessed are the hard-boiled, for they never let life hurt them. Blessed are they who complain, for they get their way in the end. Blessed are the blasé, for they never worry over their own sins. Blessed are the slave drivers, for they get results. Blessed are the troublemakers, for they make people notice them. So that's what the list might be if we had to make it. But what's Jesus's list? Let's look a little closer. First we have those who are poor in spirit. Note, not those poor because they have no funds or because they're broke and without possessions, but poor in spirit, empty. Secondly, we're told, blessed are those who mourn. And it's not those who are bereaved, but those who mourn the loss of their innocence, the loss of their righteousness, their self-respect. It's not the sorrow of bereavement, but the sorrow of repentance. Such mourners who bewail their own sinfulness, we're told, will be comforted by the only comfort that can relieve their distress, namely the free forgiveness of God. They mourn also over the havoc of suffering and death that sin spreads throughout the world. I wonder, as we hear the news from day to day about the state of our world, do we mourn? Does it make us grieve and seek God's forgiveness? For our only comfort can be found in Him, and our comfort will only be complete when sin is no more and God will wipe away every tear, as we see in Revelation 7 verse 17. The news of the happenings in our world so often are so terrible. Does it grieve us? Now on the list we come to the meek. We tend to think of the meek as the weak and effeminate. Yet the Greek adjective means gentle, humble, considerate, and courteous. Here Jesus tells us that those who are meek will inherit the earth. Oh, that we might cultivate these qualities: gentle, humble, considerate, courteous. It's not the pushy ones. The godless may boast and throw their weight about, yet real possessions elude them, elude their grasp. The meek, on the other hand, although they may be deprived and disenfranchised, they know what it is to live and reign with Christ and possess the earth which belongs to them. The next to be blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And the promise is, they will be filled. There is really not very much righteousness around, if you think about it, in our world. The people, in the main, are certainly not hungering after it. Legal righteousness is being in a right relationship with God. And this can only be found through faith in the shed blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. In Romans 1 and verse 17 it says, "For in the gospel a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith, from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith." Moral righteousness is that righteousness of character and conduct which pleases God. And social righteousness is concerned with seeking humanity's liberation from oppression, together with the promotion of civil rights, justice in the law court, justice for all mankind, integrity in business, and honor in the church, in home, and in family affairs. We might ask ourselves, as a church family, are we truly honorable to one another? Does righteousness shine forth in this place and spread out as we spread out from it? It's so often in the small things that we fall down. Oh, that doesn't really matter. Oh, yes, it does. Our lives should be righteous. Luther expressed this whole concept with his customary vigor. The command, he says, to you is not to crawl into a corner, but to run out and to offer your hands, your feet, your whole body, and to wager everything you have and can do. What is required, he goes on, is a hunger and a thirst for righteousness that can never be curbed or stopped. One that looks for nothing and cares for nothing except the accomplishment and maintenance of the right, despising everything that hinders this end. If you cannot make the world completely righteous, then do what you can. Every little helps. And so the list goes on. Blessed are the merciful. Are we merciful? Do we show mercy to others? Or do we say, well, they deserve it. Give them the worst. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. There's a great need for peacemakers in our world today. But it's not just in a worldwide sense that we need peacemakers. But we need them at work, at school, in the home, and dare I suggest it, even here in the church. Those who are peacemakers. And also, blessed are the persecuted. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad. I suppose we don't suffer much these days by way of persecution. The church in Britain, at least, has it pretty easy these days. Though there are those who think that persecution might be on the way, it might be on the increase. Well, maybe so. But whether it is or not, persecution isn't always a bad thing, as it makes us question our faith, face our doubts, and stand together in strength and encourage one another. In recent years, for example, we've seen the persecuted church in China grow in an amazing way, in leaps and bounds. There are literally millions of Christians now in China. When the missionaries were there, they struggled for many, many years, and only a few came to faith. But through the years of persecution, the church there has grown. I read the other day that there is now in Algeria, which is a dark and very difficult country to many, there's almost as many Christians in Algeria today as there are Muslims. And we think of it as a purely Muslim country. They come through persecution. An old hymn by William Cowper reminds us to look for blessings in unexpected places. It goes, "You fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds you so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head." There's a Greek word, makarios, and it can and does mean happy. J.B. Phillips translates the opening words of each beatitude, "How happy are you," rather than blessed or blessed. And several commentators have described the Beatitudes as Jesus' prescription for human happiness. Nevertheless, it's seriously misleading to render Makarios as happy. For happiness is a subjective state. We're happy if the happenings around us are pleasant. Whereas Jesus is making an objective judgment about these people. He's declaring not what they may feel like happy, but what God thinks of them, and what, on that account, they are, which is blessed or blessed. Do you and I recognize our blessings? And do we claim them for ourselves? Spurgeon, the great Baptist preacher and teacher, once told a story of how he was visiting an elderly woman in an almshouse, a woman living in poverty. And his attention was drawn to a framed document on the wall. And he asked her about it. And she said, years before, she'd cared for an aged gentleman, and before he died, he'd written out a little note of appreciation. And he'd followed it by his signature. After much persuasion, Spurgeon was allowed to borrow the paper. And when he took it to a bank, they exclaimed, "We've been wondering to whom the old gentleman left his money." She never realized what that document was. Without realizing it, she was really a wealthy woman. And she'd been living like a beggar. Possess your possessions. So often we live like beggars, when really we're rich. Rich in the blessings of God. Tozer said, "The goodness of God is the drive behind all the blessings he daily bestows upon us." Someone listed some of God's blessings for his children like this: an acceptance that can never be questioned, Ephesians 1:6. An inheritance that can never be lost, 1 Peter 1, 3-5. A deliverance that can never be excelled, 2 Corinthians 1:10. A grace that can never be limited, 2 Corinthians 12:9. A hope that can never be disappointed, Hebrews 6:18 and 19. A bounty that can never be withdrawn, 1 Corinthians 3:21 to 23. A joy that never need be diminished, John 15:11. A nearness to God that can never be reversed, Ephesians 2:13. A peace that can never be disturbed, John 14:27. A righteousness that can never be tarnished, 2 Corinthians 5:21. And a salvation that can never be cancelled, Hebrews 5:9. These are the promises of God that we can claim and make our own and know his blessing. I'm going to read again the passage I read before, but I'm reading it now in the Message, and it comes over a little differently. You are blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. You're blessed when you care. At the moment of being careful, you find yourselves cared for. You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart, put right. Then you can see God in the outside world. You're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. That's when you discover who you really are and your place in God's family. You're blessed when your commitment to God provokes persecution. The persecution drives you even deeper into God's kingdom. Not only that, count yourselves blessed every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close for comfort and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens. Give a cheer, even. For though they don't like it, I do. And all heaven applauds. And know that you are in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble. Well, there we are, the blessings of God. Make sure you claim them. If persecution or trouble comes, don't worry, you're in good company. Some questions here, if you want the sheet of questions for house groups or individually to think further about these things. I'll leave them on here and you can help yourselves. Thank you very much.